Right, so welcome to week 10 of what looks like it'll be 11 weeks altogether as a shiur. We're not going to finish it all today. That's just not realistic. But I think we'll make some serious headway, which is good. We've been talking about Kavod HaTzibur, and whether it's subjective, not subjective, can be forgiven, can't be forgiven. We came to a certain conclusion in that, the upshot of that conversation, was that pretty much everyone agrees there is a model of mechila in the case of rolling a Sefer Torah, right? The fact that you can roll a Sefer Torah tells me there is such a thing as mechila for some form of Kavod HaTzibur. So some resolve that by limiting mechila to a case in which you have a mitzvah to fulfill and there's no other way to fulfill the mitzvah. In which case, it may be relevant for women's aliyos in the event that you, let's say, don't have a Baal Kriya, or you have the case that we'll see of the city that's entirely of Kohanim. So then, you know, that can become relevant there. And you'll say, well, we'll also be Mochel on Kavod HaTzibur in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Some limit Mechila to a case in which the issue isn't really Kavod, but the issue is Tircha. In which case, it's not relevant for women's aliyos, because it's not about... The issue here is not tircha, the issue is some form of kavod, even if we don't understand exactly what it is. Others offer the possibility of mechila where it is subjectively not disgraceful, right? Or where that was the position the view that in general you could say it's subjective and that it's subject to the group at hand and whether they feel. So like we talked about the suggestion that maybe when you, if you have a family of with one matriarch and they want to give the matriarch an aliyah, then it perhaps won't be relevant there. We talked about the possibility that mechila could be done where the disgrace isn't that great, the chashukei chemetz distinction between kavod and ginai, which you then need to ask, well, what is that vis-a-vis women's aliyos, or the disgrace is towards the community versus towards God. If it's the community's disgrace, then they can be mochel. If it's Hashem's disgrace, they cannot. That Bach / Taz idea. Everyone has to agree that there is some kind of model for mechila for Kavod Tzibur. The question is, will it apply in the case of women and Kavod Tzibur? So we turn to try to understand what the issue of Kavod Tzibur is in the context of a woman's aliyah. And our first approach was the approach that the issue is sexual distraction, particularly in a place where we focus on Kedusha. By the way, I should note, I did get an answer yesterday from the Frimmer brothers to my questions about their article. Now I have to digest their response. Hopefully at some point I will, and then I'll be able to apply it to what we've said. But in terms of the school that says that it's the issue is an issue of sexual distraction inappropriate for a shul context, so then clearly it seems there's no such thing as mechila, because it's not really about what we think of as forgivable kavod. It's an issue of leading people to sin, right? Which doesn't sound like Kavod Tzibur at all, which was why the Mayim Chaim gave his approach and said, it actually isn't, you're right. Kavod Tzibur was a smokescreen, because they didn't want to tell people what it was really about. That was his explanation, and we noted there were others who disagree and said that that's not a factor. The Mishpatei Uziel, the Bnei Banim, fine. The second school of thought is that it displays a lack of education or lack of interest from those who are obligated, because women are exempt from the mitzvah and you're putting up the woman to do the mitzvah. Now, what exactly does that mean? We offered two different approaches. The approach of the Frimmers in their tradition article was to say that it's disrespectful to God. It's like the disgrace to a mitzvah that the Rambam identifies at the end of HaChoshchita when he talks about covering the blood of an animal with your foot. So you're degrading the mitzvah, and it's a disgrace to Hashem. In which case, of course, you can't be mochel, right? Following Bach Taz on how mechila works. However, I pointed out last time, and Josh pushed me on it, so I went back to it and tried to figure it out. The Bnei Banim seems to think that this school of thought, that the problem is that you are putting forth somebody who is not really obligated in the mitzvah, is not a disgrace to the mitzvah and to God, it's actually a disgrace to you. It makes you look bad. So I traced the logic of the Bnei Banim as best I could. Frankly, I'm not entirely satisfied with it for reasons that will become clear as we walk through it. But take a look at your sheet. The first source. Mishnah brought in Sukkah Lamechesamet Aleph. It's always bad form to quote a Mishnah based on the page of Gemara where it appears. You should be quoting the Parak and Mishnah, but I did it here because I wanted Rashi, and Rashi's on the Gemara. But the Mishnah says, Mishaya Evedo Isho Katan Makrinoso. This is talking about Halel. If you're having an Eved or a woman read Halel for you, Ona Achrayin Mashain Omrim, so you can do that, and you just respond word for word as they do it. V'tava lo me'era. But there is a curse for him if he does this. That's one source. And Rashi there explains, Makrin Oso, when he says that they read for him, Kacha you know again, this was the practice. Echad Koreas Ahalil Umotzi as Harabim. One person would say Halil and fulfill it for everybody. That's what he says is happening here. Even though you are repeating the words, it's like they are doing the Halil for you. Vimhaya Eved Oisho Katan, and if it's an Eved, or a woman, or a minor, Ha'ol Ve'ein Mechuyav V'damer, since we are assuming they are not obligated in saying Halel, a worthy topic in its own right, but they're not obligated, we're stipulating that, Ein Motzias HaMechuyav Midecho Baso, they do not fulfill the obligation for you, and Hilkach, therefore, One Achrav Komashu Omer, therefore you have to now respond. And what he says is, V'tavo Me'era, what's the curse for? You're saying Halel. The curse is Shelo Lamad, because you didn't learn. It's for being ignorant. Ve'im Lamad, and what if he is learned? Then Tavo Lo Me'era Shemevaza Es Kono La'aso Shluchim Ka'ela. Then he is having them be a Shaliach for him, and I must admit, I don't know in what sense they're being a Shaliach, if he's actually saying the words. But that's what Rashi says. There is a second curse for somebody who did learn and uses them to be his shaliach. That's Rashi here. As I said, I'm not entirely clear on in what way they are a shaliach, but that's what he's that's the way Rashi frames it. Yeah.
Is it possible that when Rashi says "v'im lamad," it's referring to it doesn't have to be this case?
But then
it's just. Expounding on
he's expounding on the topic of Tavo Me'era.
Yeah.
So take a look at what happens next. Further down on the same page, we quote a Braisa, source Gimel. Tana Rabbanon. Be'emes Amru ben Mivarech la'aviv, ve'eved Mivarech la'rabo, ve'isha Mivareches la'bala. This is talking about benching. Okay? And we are going to stipulate right now that the view of the Ritva is correct, that what we're talking about is, when it says ben, it means your adult son, not a minor. So your adult son can bench for you, you say amen, or your eved can bench for you, or a woman may bench for you, and we are also following the view, it seems here, that women are chayav in birkas hamazon, women are obligated in benching. There's a discussion about de'oraisa versus de'rabanan. We are within the school that they have the same obligation that you do. That's our assumption. So in all of the cases here, Isha, Eved, Katan, they are obligated just like you are. And they are benching for you. You can do that. But the Chachamim said there should be a curse for somebody who relies on them to bench on his behalf. That's the Braisa. On that, Rashi writes, Sheishta uban of mevarchin lo, if his wife or his sons bench for him, divadai machmas shelo lamadu. Because that must be because he was ignorant. Rashi didn't bring the second half. And if he is learned, he's using them for a shaliach, Rashi did not mention here. So the question is, why? Why did Rashi omit the second half of his sentence? So it's theoretically interesting to suggest maybe the Rashi that's printed on the Mishnah actually meant to apply here. It's an interesting idea. I don't know. There's clearly something wrong in the manuscripts in general in Rashi here, because the B'nai Banim points out that Rashi here takes the view, I didn't quote it on the sheet, but Rashi here takes the view that in the benching case, it's your son who is a minor. However, this same Braisa appears elsewhere, and Rashi says that it's an adult. So something's fishy. Something isn't quite right in terms of this. But what the B'nai Banim does is he suggests that there's a difference between the Halil case, in which they are not mechuyav, and therefore there's a bizayon in using them as shlichim on your behalf, because they're not even chayav, as opposed to the case over here, the case of benching, where they are chayav, and the bizayon is only that you didn't learn. And so what he suggests is that in the case where they're not chayav, that's a bizayon of the mitzvah. That's degrading to the mitzvah. You send someone who's not chayiv to do it. It wasn't important enough to me that I, who am chayiv, should do it. I send someone who's not even chayiv. However, if I send someone who is chayiv, then it's not bizayon of the mitzvah, it's bizayon for me. The mitzvah is being performed by someone who's obligated in it. The bizayon is my bizayon. It's not a problem for God. God is getting the mitzvah done by somebody who is worthy. The problem is me. And he uses that as his foothold to say that there are two different potential types of me'era. There's the me'era for what you did to God, and there's the me'era for what you did to yourself. And then he takes that, and it seems, I brought the B'nai Banim in, if anyone wants to look at it, I'll leave it here for next week. But it seems like what he's doing here is saying that the same thing is true for Kavod HaTzibur. And he says, you have the potential to make the argument that sometimes Kavod HaTzibur is about the person. And he suggests that Kavod HaTzibur is really an issue of mechzi, appearances. So for example, if they lean out of a Sefer Torah, out of a Chumash instead of a Sefer Torah, it looks like they are poor. It looks like they are indigent, they can't afford a Sefer Torah. Right? That's what the that he takes Kavod HaTzibur broadly. It's about appearances often, and the way people will look at the Tzibur after you do it in this way. So he says, that's important because what if it's not about what if the reason you're doing this is not appearance but it's actually reality? What if the reason you're laying out al-Chumash is not we have money and we don't care to spend it, but we're broke, we don't have a Sefer Torah? So he says in that case Kavod HaTzibur is waived. Kavod HaTzibur implies, in other words, people will think less of the community than is actually true. And so on that basis, he says, if they actually don't know, then she could lean. It's like the community that actually doesn't have a Sefer Torah and can't afford a Sefer Torah, so they can use a Chumash. He says it's all about appearances. That's what he suggests. And so, what he says is, it's really about you and not about the community. It's about you and not about God. It's about you appearing to be ignorant by sending up the woman in order to lane, and therefore it's forgivable, number one, if you actually don't know how to lane, you don't have anyone who can lane, or theoretically if the tzibur could forgive its own kavod, then maybe you open the door to say they could forgive their kavod in this regard as well. If you accept the idea of the Bach / Taz, that I can't forgive God's honor but I can forgive my own honor, so if I can make the argument that this is my honor, which is what he seems to be making. Now, he doesn't accept this altogether, but this is within this section of his tshuva. This is not his psak. But within this, he suggests that mechila theoretically would be doable. I have to admit that I'm entirely unclear about what he's done here. And the reason why I'm unclear is because I should have compared this to Hallel. Right? Hallel, the woman is not mechuyav. Kriyas Hatara, the woman is not mechuyav. And therefore it should be about Hashem's kavod, not about your kavod. So I'm not clear on what he's done. I read it and reread it, and I'm still at a loss. I may just email him and just ask him to explain it to me because I don't get it. But that's what I was able to draw from him. This idea that the idea that me'era could be towards you or towards God, and the idea that Kavod HaTzibur may be about you appearing to be. Like the second type of me'era, you appearing to be something you're really not. But if you really are that, then Kavod HaTzibur is not a concern. And also, you could theoretically be mochel. I would add to that because it's about you and not about about Hashem. Adam, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I'm just not totally clear about why it's the distinction between the two cases. I mean, where is he getting it?
Between which two?
Hallel and benching.
Because Rashi only mentioned the first half when he talked about the benching case. He didn't mention the issue of you're sending a shaliach like that. So he says that shows that where they're actually chayav, there's nothing wrong with sending someone like that. It's not a bizayon to God. It's only a bizayon to you for not having yourself done it, for having sent somebody else.
Right, but so you say how does that transfer to lightning because they aren't actually chayav?
Right. I don't understand.
Sometimes it does.
Well, that's the thing. It's not clear. I don't understand what he's actually done in his tshuva, because he goes from that observation, he goes immediately into kavod sibur being a mechzi thing, and as though you could just... unless all he's doing is suggesting that there are cases where it's towards God, and there are cases where it's towards you, and I've proved that by showing you that regarding Me'era, and now regarding kavod sibur, I'm going to show you how it's about you. But I'm not... I have to admit, I'm at a loss. But that was the second approach to kavod sibur, is you're sending up someone who is not obligated in the mitzvah. And then the third one was Rav Henkin in a separate shuva in Dalet Gimel, bless you, which we saw at the end last time, that if you rely on women for this, the men will lapse into being uneducated. To which I responded, that's very nice, but I don't understand why that's called kavod sibur. That's a separate concern. It's called concern that people won't learn anything. Nonetheless, the last approach that I'm going to mention here is the approach brought by Rav Mendel Shapiro in his article, which we've quoted from time to time here, and he contends that kavod tzibur means you are actually insulting the tzibur by sending up a woman to do this because women are of low social standing. That's his argument, and he claims that that's found in the Bach. I disagree with his reading of the Bach, but take a look at the Bach, source A. We've seen this Bach before. This is when the Bach talks about inability to forgive kavod tzibur. And one of the reasons that he gave was that if you are able to forgive kavod tzibur, then it's going to do away with all the different takanos. Every time the Chacham has said, don't do this because of kavod tzibur, the tzibur will say, yeah, but we're mochel. So in source, hey, I brought you the excerpt from the Bach. He says, im yirshu le tzibur limchol, those are my words, im yirshu le tzibur limchol az, then the Bach starts. Kol hani takana l'shetiknu chachamim ipnei kavod tzibur. Then all the takana the chachamim created for kavod tzibur, shlo ligol sefer Torah b'tzibur, not to roll the Torah in public, v'chid yisho lo tikwa b'tzibur b'nei kavod tzibur, that the woman doesn't lane in public because of kavod tzibur, upocheach lo yisar kapov, that the kohen who's wearing torn clothing doesn't get the dochen, dignayu le tzibur, because it's disgraceful for them, v'chein katan lo yisa as kapav, and that a minor shouldn't pick up his hands, meaning to dochen shein kava le tzibur li as kfufim lebir chaso, that they should all have to have his bracha. Ima ta omer derashan limchol, if you're going to tell me they can forgive it, im kein loho ilu betakantum klum, then they didn't do anything with their takana. That's his statement. You follow? So Rabbi Shapiro looks at the fact that if you see the list that he gave of kavod tzibur enactments, he included the woman not laning because of kavod tzibur, and he concluded saying dignayhu l'tzibur, it's derogatory to the tzibur. These things are derogatory to the tzibur. So in source vav he writes the following: we have already seen that Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, that's the Bach, regarded kavod tzibur as an ab initio concept, meaning that it's a lechatchila, that it can be forgiven. Thus, despite his position that the congregation may not waive its dignity, it would appear that Bach considered the disqualification of women from Kriyas HaTorah, even if it is said to protect Kavod Shamayim, to reflect essentially aesthetic cultural sensitivities. Okay? From the fact that he said that it's only a lechatchila, but b'di'eved, you could override kavod tzibur. That must mean, he says, that even if we call it kavod shamayim, nonetheless, it's about aesthetics, it's about cultural sensitivities, such that, b'di'eved, you could lose it. Just as a community should choose the imposing figure over the wise man to represent it before the Lord, meaning that if you have a chacham who doesn't have a beard, he loses to the beardless... he loses to the chazan who has a beard, but maybe he isn't such a chacham. So the congregation should not denigrate Kriyas HaTorah by performing it through women. And as he says further in his article, I brought you one excerpt, he says it's actually degrading because the woman is like the guy without the beard. She doesn't have the respect of the community. That's what he writes. And his point in his article is to say the world has changed and women are now respected and therefore there should be no kavod tzibur problem. That is, he has a broader point than that. He makes other statements as well. But that's one of the linchpins of his argument, is this was an issue when no one respected women. Today we respect women and therefore the kavod tzibur is no longer a concern. Sorry? So Rabbi Shapiro got his smicha from, I believe, actually YU. Although, no, it wasn't YU. It was more yeshivish. It was, where did he get his smicha from? Sorry. the I'm blanking right now. I think he wrote it in English because he wanted it to be read broadly. I think he wanted people to read this. He didn't want to have a situation in which, frankly, well, I'll say something after about this. I don't want to say it now because the person I'm talking about is going to be insulted if he ever hears this. But I'll tell you in a second. He holds... Yes, no, he's YU. He got a smicha from YU. He has degrees from YU and from Columbia, and he got a smicha at YU, and he practices law in Yerushalayim. But he writes this in English not because of inability to grasp the Hebrew. When you read the article, you can see he's reading his sources in the original. But he wants it to be well-read and widely read. So he claims that that's the idea, that we don't respect women, and that's what it's about. And then he goes on to say...
He says it's even within the Kavod Shammai perspective, not just the Kavod...
Yeah, correct.
How does he make that true?
Because God doesn't respect... Their feeling was that God wouldn't respect... No, sorry, that God would feel degraded, because look, they sent up somebody who they don't respect as their representative.
This is the Kavod Shammai is Kavod Tzivur.
Yes. Well, the two are intertwined. Because we don't respect women, therefore for us to send them up is degrading to God and degrading to ourselves.
Kavod Shammai is not objective, it's still subjective.
Correct.
Is he making a diuk out of this Bach, or what?
No, it's not a diuk, really. He's saying the fact that the Bach could call it a Gnai must mean...
He's not calling it a Gnai.
Well, he is.
He says we can't call it a Tzibor.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Well, he said the Gnai. Why are we assuming that's going on?
No, he said, because he's assuming Dignai Hulitzibor refers back to all three of the preceding cases. Lo Liglol, Lo Tikra, Mnei Kavodat Tzibor. The words of Mnei Kavodat Tzibor are part of the quote from the Brisa in Megillah, not the Bach's observation. I don't think he's wrong on that front. I think he's wrong for a different reason. I think he's wrong because the fact that he's calling it Gnai doesn't translate to women are not respected. It could still translate to women aren't obligated to learn, and therefore it's a Gnai for you to send them up. It's not... I think he's over-reading the Bach. But the truth of the matter is, I have to admit, that Rav Henkin also thinks that's what the Bach means. He disagrees with the Bach, but he thinks that's what the Bach meant. If you take a look at Sor Zion, another tshuva from the Bnei Banim on the topic, he writes, Ve'ein l'hashgiach b'tamei ha'achronim b'inyon zeh. He says one should not look at what the Achronim wrote regarding this, which I explained in brackets, meaning the definition of Kavod HaTzibur. The Bnei Banim writes, don't look at all these things that they're telling you. Ulu Dugma, for example, Mashanera Babach Ba'orachayim Nun Gimel, She'isha Lo Tikra B'tzibur B'nei She'ginai L'tzibur L'tzeis Yidei Chavasam Ayidei P'chusei Kavod. So he is reading it very clearly the way that Mendel Shapiro reads it, right? He says the issue is, for the far as the Bach is concerned, that they are of reduced status. Ve'ilu nitzvu ha'achronim k'mo neid lefaresh shaloka harishonim hayamakom lidon. The Bnei Banim says no. He says the Rishonim didn't say that. The Rishonim said that the issue is that they didn't learn, right? That's Rashi. I'm sorry, that the man didn't learn, or that they're appointing someone who's not machuyev. He says that's what the Rishonim said. So if all the achronim stood here as one and disagreed with the Rishonim about the meaning of Kavod Tzibur, then we would have something to talk about. But it's not true. He says not all the Achronim do this. And in fact, the Achronim disagree with each other. Each one presenting his own explanation and interpretation of Kavod Tzibur. He says that, I'm sorry, we're not goreis them. We don't consider this to be something of substance. Because the Rishonim have already voiced their opinion, and it's different. So he takes the view that this is what the Bach meant. I don't think it's what the Bach is talking about. I really don't. I think he's misreading the Bach. Nonetheless, that's his take. He also claims the Levush says that, but I think he's misreading the Levush. If you take a look at Source Ches, the Levush is also a very important source. So he writes, Mordechai Yafet, going back to the 16th century, he says, Min hadin, hakol olam minyan shiva, afilu isha v'katan she'adeh alami mevarchin, aval amru chazal, isha l'tikra b'tzim b'nei kavod tzibur, v'davka lehitztarev im anashim l'hashlim minyan hakru'im. The Levush writes, this is only a problem if you're going to join them with the men, to make up seven. Avoloshiu kulam nashim oktanim shein kavod latara laotzia bishvilam. But he says it can't be that you have women as all seven. In other words, what the Levush is talking about is the permission in the first half of the sentence. When it says that if not for kavod atzibur, you could have the women get an aliyah. Even that, he says, was only to have them get some of the aliyahs, not all of the aliyahs. Why? Shein kavod la Torah lo tziyah bishvilam. It would not be respectful to the Torah to take it out just for them, just for women, just for ketanim. So he claims that that also demonstrates that women were of lesser standing. Because he said it wouldn't be kavod haTorah to bring out the Torah for just for them. But again, I don't think he's correct. I think he's reading his idea into the Levush. But I don't think that's the only way to read the Levush.
You could just say that's because they're not five.
Yeah, you can give this just easily. Give the answers of the Rishonim. I think he's reaching.
The same thing.
No, because he's saying that it's not that they're not chayav. He's saying that it's because women don't have social status because we don't respect women. The chiyuv didn't change. Whether women are publicly respected did change. Ergo, dot, dot, dot. That's his line of thinking. The Frimmers argue against this read. If you take a look at their footnote 249 in their piece. But they point out, you know, we have a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that says you can give a mamzer an aliyah. There is no one of lesser social status in the Jewish community than the mamzer. And yet, he's getting an aliyah. So, if you really believe this was about social status, then there were others you would include in the ban. The fact that we don't do so says that this isn't the reason.
Which footnote?
Footnote 249. The Rama on the Mamzer is Zorach Chaim Reish Beis Gimel. So based on what we've said, if you take the view, the first view, that it's a bad sexual distraction, so it's not open for Mechila, you can't forgive it. If you take the second approach, as understood by the Bnei Banim, who I still don't understand, but if you take the approach of the Bnei Banim that it's about the people's disgrace, then if I follow the view of Bach and Taz, you can forgive your Kavod HaTzibur. However, the Frimmers note a conversation with Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. If you take a look at Source Yud Beis, right after Yud Aleph, where I summed up the different Svaros. So in Source Yud Beis, they say, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in a conversation with Dov I. Frimmer, maintains that Halacha L'maisa, a congregation today cannot set aside Kavod HaTzibur, even according to the, quote, shame of illiteracy school. The Rav Aaron said, even if you take that, it doesn't matter. Even if you take the view that it's about shame of illiteracy, because they look bad, they look like they're ignorant or whatever, nonetheless, you cannot be mochel. If you take the third approach, that it's about fear of ignorance, people aren't going to learn, then it's not open for mechila. It sounds like it's gzeira. Don't let women do this, because if you do, then those who are chayav aren't going to learn how to lean. You can't change that. You can't lift that whenever you feel like it. If you take the fourth approach, the final approach, the approach that it's about women's lower status, then yes, it could be open to the... It wouldn't be open to mechila, but it would be open to the argument of kavod hatzibur being subjective and maybe it changed over time because now women have greater status. But once again, I'm really bothered by his view. I don't think it holds water. I just don't think it holds water. He writes that nowadays it's socially unacceptable to say that women are of lower status, and that's what motivates everybody to come up with an alternative definition of kavod hatzibur. Lav davka.
I had a question. Is even like you can say that different people have different standings for different things. Women are still not viewed the same way when you're looking at like backbreaking labor, even though we like to think so. It's not
right.
So even then,
right. I'm not sure how to apply that here, but I mean, it's true. I mean, the person who's trapped under the log in the fire isn't necessarily going to view all firefighters as being equal.
Yeah.
I should also note one last line, just because the firm has quoted it from Rav Aaron, and I'm not sure what the line means, but they quoted it, so I'm bringing it here, from their 281st footnote in Yud Gimel. He says, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in a conversation with Dov I. Frimmer, it's the same conversation, you see, emphasized that under all circumstances, there can be no setting aside of Kavod HaTzibur without the congregation having full knowledge of what is being set aside and why. Without such knowledge, the waiver is invalid. I don't actually know what that means. But they quoted it, and I thought it was an interesting quote. So I'm bringing it here as well, just to conclude the topic of whether you can forgive Kavod HaTzibur. The upshot of all of this is, we spent our first 6 weeks or so dealing with the halachic problems of, is she going to lay and who's going to make the bracha, yeah, the issues of a shaliach and the issues of Shemaya Ka'onet, and that was one set of issues. We spent now 3+ weeks on Kavod HaTzibur and defining it and can it be forgiven or not forgiven. The upshot is that there is an opening depending on which way you take Kavod HaTzibur. If I take Kavod HaTzibur as being about the community's honor, then you have the possibility, a la Bach and Taz, that you could be Mocha Kavod HaTzibur. But there's a third area that has to be addressed, which we're going to take on briefly today. And that is the issue of Shas Hadchak. What about the case where you don't have any other choices? We noted briefly in addressing the argument that Kavod HaTzibur is about distraction, that we have precedent for overriding Kavod HaTzibur for Shas Hadchak, right? Remember, the argument was made that if you felt, really, that Kavod HaTzibur was about sexual distraction in shul, then we should have no heter ever for giving a woman an aliyah, even in a case of Shas Hadchak, like the case of the city that's all of Kohanim. And that was brought as an argument against that explanation of Kavod HaTzibur. But it's true that we have exceptions. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tefillah, we've seen it before, but I brought it again here in Sorsi Yudalad, Isha lo tikwa betzibur mipnei Kavod HaTzibur, flat. He doesn't say Hakol Olin Minyan Shiva. He says flat, woman doesn't lay because of Kavod HaTzibur. The Maaseh Rokeach on that, if you take a look at source Tezvav, says, Ishlo Tikra, he quotes you the Brisa from Megillah, I'm jumping it, it's the whole first line to the second line, V'Rabbeinu Kasav Kitzur Hadin the Ishlo Tikra Mabnei Kavod HaTzibur, Imke Neser Legamri, he says, from the fact that the Rambam didn't bother to quote the first half of the sentence, everybody counts towards the seven, from the fact that he jumped in with, women don't lane, that means there's no heter. That's the position of the Maaseh Rokeach, and in the article in Tradition by the Frimmers, in footnotes 259 to 263, they try to show that other Rishonim believe this as well. That there's no room for Shas Hadchak, there's no nothing. Women don't get aliyos. That's all. However, I should note, way back when, we saw the Taz in Or HaChaim Nun Gimel Beis. And the Taz noted that the Beis Yosef used similar language regarding the beardless chazan. When he said, you can't call him up to be the chazan, you can't send him as your chazan because of Kavod HaTzibur. And he assumed that the Rambam was open to Mechila in that case. In other words, the diuk of the Maaseh Rokeach, his analysis of, the Rambam didn't quote me the first half of the sentence, therefore, women can never get an aliyah, I'm not so sure. I mean, it's different from the beardless chazan case, because in the beardless chazan case, there is no first half of the sentence to quote. There's nothing being omitted. So maybe that's why the Maaseh Rokeach would distinguish between the two. But having said that, even if I take the Maaseh Rokeach's read of the Rambam, that you can't forgive it, we're done with forgiving it, that you can't override it for Shas Hadchak, nonetheless, there have been cases of Shas Hadchak in which there were rulings that said you can override it. Take a look, please, at Mordechai in Gittin, source Tezayin. He is quoting an earlier tshuva from Aram Bar Baruch of Rothenburg. V'ir shakula kohanim ve'ein ba. It should say afilu Yisrael echad. I believe that's the correct edition, but I wasn't sure, so I left in both. The city is entirely of kohanim. Mirali da kohen yikra shnei pa'amim. So he says, you have a kohen, get the first two aliyos, bless you. V'shuv yikru nashim, and then you call up women. Da'kol mashlim in the minyan shiva, because everybody counts towards the seven, v'afilu evad isha katan. Upiresh Rabbeinu Simcha, one of the Balei HaTosfos, delav davka minyan shiva. It's not just for seven aliyos, elahu adin l'gimel. The same thing would be true for a lady that only requires three aliyos. Midisnan stamaberik shlishi de megillah katan koy v'taru mitargim, because when they discuss a minor reading, they don't distinguish between the seven and the three. Granted, the woman's source, it said specifically minyan shiva, right? Nonetheless, it also mentioned katan there, and katan we know can do with the three as well. Unihi de masik Allah avalamu chacham yishol etikra v'taru nekavod etzibur. Granted, he says that the Gemara concludes, the Brisa concludes, a woman is not lame because of kavod etzibur. Still, hecha delo efsher, where there is no other choice, yidache kavod tzibur mishum pegam kohanim, shalayomru b'nei grushos hein. He says, better that we override, not forgive, but override kavod tzibur, because we have a greater imperative, which is that people who see the Kohen get Revi'i are going to think there's something wrong with his Yichus, and that's why he didn't get one of the first Aliyos. So therefore, they gave him Shlishi, Revi'i, whatever it is. So we don't want that. Better to call up the woman. That's what the Mordechai quotes from Maram Bar Baruch. So you see this idea that in Isha'as HaFak, she could in fact get the Aliyah. That goes Yavetz, then it's his parish at the end of Megillah, so he offers another possibility. Hakol Olin, that classic Brisa, Nira Dehainu Echad Efsher, that's where he can. Right? Where it's possible that you can get a male to do it. Veresha Mairi, the first half of the sentence, which said Hakol Olin, that's talking about B'daleka Shiva de Beki Lemigri. That's where you don't have seven who could lain. Ve'ika Isha Beki, and there is a woman who could lain. De'lo Sagi V'lavachi. So you have no other options for Kriyas HaTorah. So the Yavetz suggests, if you don't have seven who could lain, then you can call up a woman. He also has a separate tshuva, of which I didn't have the original manuscript, but if you want to look, the Firmer is quoted in footnotes 268 and 269. He has a piece there. It's a very odd case. A woman had a baby, and the husband is away, and she needs a mishaberach. So it's not clear to me what their practice was, that you had to get an aliyah in order to have a mishaberach made. But he offers that as a case in which a woman will get the aliyah. And then the Sherek Nes Hagadola in Orachaim Taf Reish Tzadi has a case in which a woman was called up by accident for the Aliyah. How that happened, I don't know. I don't know what that means. They looked at the wrong name on the card. I don't know what happened. But they called up the woman for the Aliyah. So she goes. Because once you're called up, you have to go. That's the way it works. Right? Remember we
start substituting people's names.
Yeah. It's like 6 weeks ago or so, we talked about the case in which the guy, the Israeli, got called up on Yom Tov Sheni, the last day of Yom Tov, and now he has no choice, he has to go up, and he can still avoid it or not avoid it. Difficult, this issue of backing down once you've been called up for an aliyah. Now, interesting problem. That's going to solve Kavod HaTzibur. In other words, you'll tell me, Kavod HaTzibur is an unforgivable, non-subjective, halachic value, such that you're stuck with it. But it's overridden by a higher value, which is the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, or not walking away from an aliyah, or pagam of Kohanim. Right? That's what you want to suggest. But what are you going to do with everything we learned in our first 6 weeks? All the technical laning problems that we've discussed. So the Firmers in footnote 264 contend that either these heterim that were given were, meaning the Maran Bar Baruch, the Yavetz, whatever, were four cases in which the Ola is the one who is going to lain, so you avoid the problem of having a separate Ola and Baal Kriya, and about the Ola making the Baruch while the Baal Kriya lains, or you have to follow the minority school of Shomea Ka'one that says that a Bar Chiyuva is able to do a mitzvah on behalf of a non-Bar Chiyuva. So the person who is laning can do the mitzvah on behalf of the Ola. That would be the way to look at it. Ayin Shum, we spent 6 weeks on the ins and outs of this. I'm not ready to go back into that right now. Yeah?
Maybe you're going to discuss right now. Why would that Mishas Adchak?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to discuss right now. So the question is our world a Shas Adchak world? The argument that is made, Mendel Shapiro and others have made, is that this is Shas Adchak. Because women are now educated in everything else, and they're learned and able to lane, and you're now not going to let them do this, they're going to walk away. Now, here I have to correct a mistaken assumption that people make, that it's only now that women are able to lane. Women always knew how to lane. It's an explicit Gemara Nedarim that when they taught boys and girls to read Chumash, and they taught boys and girls to read Chumash, they learned with the notes. The Mishnah in Nedarim, Sima Lamed, talks about a man who takes a vow not to benefit somebody else, and says that he's not allowed to teach him Torah, but he's allowed to teach Banav Ubnosav Mikra. You can teach his sons and daughters Mikra. And the Gemara on that Mishnah, it's like Lamed Ches or so, says explicitly this includes Pisuch Ta'amim, learning the notes for laning. So no one can say it's only now that women are physically learned enough to lane. It's not true. Women were, in the days of the Mishnah and the Gemara, women knew how to lane. That wasn't the factor here. That's my rant on the side. But the argument is that this is a Sha'as HaChak situation because women are walking away from Judaism because they're not empowered to be laning or getting aliyos. That's the argument. The question is that true? Well, so there are two questions. Question number one is, if it's not Sha'as Hadchak, then you are creating a bidyeved situation as a lechatchila, in which case you may not be yotze. The Frimmers have a very long footnote, footnote 19. It's the second part of footnote 19, 19b, where they talk about the problem. This is a much broader halachic question. Forget this situation for the moment. Okay, any bidyeved under the sun, right? There are all sorts of areas of halacha where we say this is the way you should do this lechatchila, but bidyeved you can do that. What if I chose the bidyeved option where it should not have applied? Am I yotze in the mitzvah? And the answer, he argues, is no. You're not yotze if you do a bidyeved where it shouldn't have been done, where you claim it was Sha'as Hadchak or after the fact and it isn't true. So that's number one. That's number one. Number two, the Frimmers weigh in with a heavy argument in source Yud Ches on this point, and they bring in the big guns. They quote Rav Aaron Lichtenstein in Yud Ches. He says, we note in this regard repeated suggestions that we live in a time of crisis with waning commitment to halachic authority. Hence, it is argued that we should declare our times as a, quote, Sha'as Hadchak generation. And in footnote 274, he tells you who he's quoting here. This is because there are many who are truly not committed to halacha, but want a ritual-based service which feels like halacha and reflects the congregant's own more egalitarian values. The latter group threatens that if halacha won't show greater flexibility, they will bolt. These arguments notwithstanding, we find it hard to accept this claim as more valid now than it was at the turn of the 20th century, during the periods of the world wars, and again in the 50s or 70s. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has asserted that while there may well be Sha'as Hadchak situations, these have to be judged on a case-by-case determination. To label a whole generation as Sha'as Hadchak in order to permit wholesale leniencies reserved only for extreme situations would seem totally unfounded and uncalled for. Besides, Sha'as Hadchak describes instances where a ritual cannot be performed because the congregants are not physically or halachically able to do so. Not because they lack desire. Right? There are no Bali Kriya. Not someone said, I am not going to participate unless I am able to get an aliyah. On the contrary, millennia of Jewish history have taught us that we will not be able to preserve Judaism by watering it down. Over the past two centuries, others have tried this approach and failed, certainly over the long term. Yet orthodoxy overall continues to thrive, debatable, to the surprise of some and the chagrin of others. That's their argument, which I present without judgment. I think you could argue both sides of this coin, in terms of whether it is Sha'as Hadchak or not. I mean, some of their points are not up for debate. Some of their points are fundamentally true. The problem of imposing a bidyeved as a lechatchila is fundamentally a problem. The fact that, in general, Sha'as Hadchak is about cases where you can't, not cases where you choose not to, is also true. Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is, I don't know why they have to make this argument, which I would say is weaker than the argument of who says you're allowed to hold halacha hostage.
Right.
And if you're going to leave because you don't like halacha, so I'm sorry to hear that, but then here's the door. Meaning like...
Right, and they do make that argument. I didn't quote you, the entire piece.
I think that's stronger, because that's halacha as a system, as opposed to...
Right. And the response to that argument is brought by Mendel Shapiro and others, which is that we're going to see it now. So let me get to it. I'm moving now into the final section, which is other factors that have been raised on this point. So one of the first arguments that we'll see, and this speaks to Adam's point, in favor. I'm doing first the ones that are in favor of giving the aliyah, then we'll get to the ones that are against. Although we won't finish it all today. But Mendel Shapiro argues that Chazal in general wanted to be inclusive, and certainly you see it in the case of the Baal Kriya. Take a look at Source Yud Tes from his piece. He says, the introduction of the Baal Kriya is of more than historical interest, meaning after he's given you an introduction to the fact that the Gaonim created this thing. Having the Torah read by a person other than the Oleh paved the way for the blind and the ignorant to receive Aliyot. Persons who had hitherto been excluded because of their inability to read, right? That's that Ramah, which we've seen, that says that you can call up someone who is blind, you can call up an Amaretz to get an Aliyah. He says that only works because you have a Baal Kriya. You can't call up someone who's blind and tell them to lane. Maybe one who's particularly educated, but
that
generally not.
That doesn't mean that the reason that they instituted the Baal Kriya was in order to be more inclusive.
Correct. But read what he says first. For our purposes, it invites... I mean, we did assume it was to be inclusive, sort of.
Well, sometimes when we embarrass people, but if you don't... Yeah. If you only invite smart people, you're not going to embarrass anyone, so...
Well, we did see... We talked about, when we talked about the institutions about Kriya, we saw two different views in the Rishonim. Right? One view was, it's not to, so as not to embarrass people. The other view is, so as not to start fights, because people are angry they didn't get an aliyah. Why am I not being called up? And then we had the other problem with the person who is called up and really can't do a good job. Right? So, lavdavka, that there's no spirit of inclusiveness. I think it can be argued that there is. In the fact that we don't want to embarrass people, and the fact that we don't want to cause fights, I think it can be said that there's a spirit of inclusiveness. I don't think he's wrong in that regard. He may be overplaying it, but I think it's there. But look at what he says. For our purposes, it invites us to query whether, even if we concede that a woman may not read the Torah aloud, she may be called to the Torah for an aliyah, where the Torah is read by a male Baal Kriya. Now, again, the framers spent a lot of time on the question of whether that works, having a male lane and a woman make the bracha, and the Shema Ka'ona, and the whole bit. But he's arguing that, even if you don't want her reading aloud, if you believe that that's your Kavod HaTzibur problem, even still, she can get an aliyah with a male Baal Kriya, and that's the whole point of having a Baal Kriya, is to enable those who couldn't otherwise get an aliyah. Of equal, if not greater significance, was the spirit of inclusiveness that animated the enactment. The Rishonim who introduced the practice of having a Baal Kriya were faithful to halachic precedent that went to lengths to include women and the unlearned in the life of the religious community, even to the point of finessing explicit prohibitions. What's he talking about? The next sentence. The outstanding exemplar of this approach is Rabbi Yossi, who held that women bringing sacrifices in the temple might voluntarily lay hands, somchot, on their offering prior to its slaughter. So he says, the fact that women are able to do smicha on a karban, that is because they were sensitive to them and wanted to include them. What he's talking about is true. And we're going to segue into that in a moment.
What's the explicit prohibition?
The explicit prohibition? Well, we'll get to that. Hold on. Just hang in there. But their argument fundamentally is the Shapiro argument is really three different things. So let me state them separately. Argument number one is the Baal Kriya position was created to include people, and therefore we should be informed. That should inform the way we approach women's involvement, and it should enable women's involvement. Number two, once you have the Baal Kriya, there's no more issue of Kavod Tzibur in having a woman receive an aliyah, because she's not leaning. Now, on this, the Frimmers will respond. Number one, the technical problems of Bracha and Shemaya Ka'ona remain. Number two, it won't solve the sexual issue, right, of distraction. She's still going up to stand there on the bima with all the men watching her. It won't stop the problem of taking obligations lightly. That will still exist. He's arguing this is Shasat Chak. It overrides those concerns. But you have issues that you haven't solved. And further, the framers point out, pages 107, 108 of their piece, following the view of Rivash, which we quoted umpteen weeks ago, where the Rivash says women were only given aliyos in the first place out of fear that there wouldn't be sufficient Baalei Kriya. Right? He says that was where it came from, because women aren't chayav. There's no reason for them to get aliyos. The only reason for Hakol Olin, according to the Rivash, was because they were worried you wouldn't have enough people who could lane. So their statement is no. Now that there's a Baal Kriya, there's less reason for them to have an aliyah. You're not serving any purpose. So that's the argument against his statement that once it's a Baal Kriya, you've reduced the Kavod Tzibur argument. Number one, you haven't really reduced the Kavod Tzibur argument. Number two, you have halachic problems of how they're actually Yotzei Kriyas HaTorah and how it's not a Bracha Levatala. And number three, the institution of Baal Kriya actually removes the imperative for them to get an aliyah in the first place in the original system. That's the argument against. But then his last point here about the Gemara and Chagiga is a very interesting point. This issue of what we call Nachas Ruach Lenashim. So, where this starts is the Gemara and Chagiga source Chaf. I think we'll get through this today. Rabbi Yossi says, Sachli Abba Elozer. Pam Achas Hayalanu Egel Shal Zivche Shlamim. Okay, Abba Elazar. I don't know if that means his father, it's Rabbi Yossi ben Elazar, or he's talking about a sage named Elazar. Abba was used as a title of honor. But he says, once we had a calf that was a carbon shlamim, ve'avinu le'ezras nashim v'samchu alav nashim. We brought it to the area of the women, and they leaned on the carbon. Now this is, you know, not something they're obligated to do. Smicha is by males. Lo mipnei smicha benashim, not because women are supposed to be doing the smicha. Ela kidei lasos nachas ruach lenashim. It was to make them happy. They wanted to also lean on the carbon. So this is only quoted in the Gemara in Chagiga as part of a discussion about the nature of smicha on a carbon, because there are problems with smicha on your carbon Chagiga because you're bringing your Chagiga on Yom Tov. And you're leaning on the animal. The assumption is you're supposed to actually lean. You're making use of an animal on Yom Tov. So that's part of a broader discussion about how smicha is done in on a karban. And they bring this and they say, "Ve'isakadaitach smicha b'chol kocho ba'inan." If you're going to take the view that you're supposed to lean on the karban with all of your strength, you know what you have as a problem now. People who lean on karbanos are making use of the karban. Right? That's called me'ila. You're making use of the carbon for yourself. Where you're chayav to do smicha, that's your mitzvah. But if you're not chayav to do it, you're making use of the carbon for yourself. So he says, "V'yisak gedayta smicha b'kocho ba'inan." If you think we have to lean on the carbon full strength, mishum nachas ruach denashim avdina avoda b'kachin, to make them happy, we're going to allow them to make use of the carbon? No, can't be. Elav shmami no lo ba'inan b'kocho. The answer must be you don't have to lean full strength. So the Gemara answer is not necessarily. I will tell you no. True smicha is, in fact, leaning full strength. But they told the women, we don't want you to do that. They told the women to, they said no. They said, make your hands float. Put your hands on top of the animal. There are two different ways you could translate akfu. Either to float on a surface, or you could say it means lahakif, like to be on a boundary. But the point is, either way, they said, we don't want you leaning full strength. You're not supposed to lean full strength on the carbon. So they told them they could do something like smicha, but not full smicha. That's the justification. That's the Gemara there. That's a case of nachas ruach for women. And even though, so what's the chiddush of having them do this? Now, what have you violated? The answer is, there's a concern, midurabanan, that if someone is going to do this, they're going to come to do this. Right? If they're going to lean partway, they're going to come to lean fully. And yet, they weren't concerned about that because of nachas ruach l'nashim. That's case number one. Case number two, in the interest of time, I'm going to go a little quickly here, is regarding shofar on Yom Tov. The rule is that women are exempt from the mitzvah of blowing shofar. And therefore, we should say, don't blow shofar. You're not supposed to blow shofar other than for a mitzvah. Nonetheless, numerous Rishonim mention, the Arayim mentions, others mention, that you can blow shofar for a woman on Yom Tov, and they can blow shofar for themselves. And the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, I brought you one, just because it was a very concise presentation, he says, even though women are pater, mikol makom im ratzu l'tkoa ba'atzman harishus b'yadon, if they want to blow shofar, they may. Granted, this is a rabbinic prohibition against blowing shofar unnecessarily on Yom Tov. Tell it to the people who blow the shofar like 100 different ways after davening, because in Yavne, because they're unhappy with the way the shofar was blown. Nonetheless, there's a derabanan. So he says, "Mikom akum kidei lasos nachas ruach lenashim hitziru lein iser kal kazeh she'ein bo afilu mishum shvus gamar ela mishum uvdin dechol." He says, "For nachas ruach, we overrode it because it's not a real derabanan; it's uvdin dechol." And indeed, the question of what you're violating exactly by blowing a shofar on Yom Tov is a good question. But that's the second case of nachas ruach. The third case is a tshuva in the Trumas Hadeshin. There's the famous tshuva Soris Chav Beis regarding women going to shul when they are in Ida. And there also, he says, that we say women can go into shul even when they are anida, and we're not worried about it because of nachas ruach lenashim, because they'd be very upset if they couldn't go to shul and they had to stand outside. Those are the three sources that are quoted to claim nachas ruach lenashim is a halachic value that should be employed to make this a doable thing, to say that we should override Kavod Tzibur. And indeed, Rabbi Sperber, Daniel Sperber, in his Darko Shel Halacha, says that should override Kavod Tzibur. Even if your name is not Shas Adchak, nonetheless, Nachas Ruach L'Nashim. the Fermat brothers argue against in their article, because they say your cases aren't good cases. First of all, the Smicha case did not override an Isser. The rabbis just didn't create a gezera of don't hold your hands like this, lest you press down on the animal. That's their argument in footnote 364, 365. Regarding shofar, granted that we are lifting this uvda de whole thing of blowing shofar, but number one, that's not really such an Isser. We don't know what it is. And number two, there is a kiyum mitzvah for them in blowing shofar. That's the firmer argument. Now, I'm not clear on why there isn't a kiyum mitzvah for them also in lightning. In other words, there's still Talmud Torah. So I'm not so clear on why there isn't kiyum mitzvah for them. Maybe I should ask them that. But that's their argument in footnotes 367 to 369. And regarding the Nida and Shul, they point out, which you can see in the Truma Sadeshin himself, that this wasn't really an Isser. There was no Isser against women going to Shul when they were Nida. That's simply not true. What there was some kind of Chumra Ba'alma Precious thing going. If you look at footnote 372, 373, where he discusses it. And that's not on the level of Kavod Tzibur. And therefore, you can't tell me that just like Nachas Ruach overrode this Ad Chumra, so too Nachas Ruach is going to override Kavod Tzibur. So that's the argument back and forth in terms of Nachas Ruach L'Nashim. So today we covered the rest of Kavod Tzibur in terms of the four different approaches and the question of whether you could be Mochel, not be Mochel. We then also dealt with Shas Hadchak, the argument saying that it is a Shas Hadchak and therefore it should be permitted, noting that the Rambam is never willing to override it for Shas Hadchak. And the question of whether our case is Shas Hadchak or not. And we also went through the argument of Nachas Ruach L'Nashim. What we still have to see is the argument that Rabbi Sperber makes regarding Kavod HaBrios, overriding Kavod HaTzibur. Maybe this is Kavod HaBrios for them if they're denied an Aliyah. So we have to talk about that. And then we also have to bring the argument that Minhag Yisrael is not to do this. We haven't done this in centuries, even if it was permitted at some point. And the question of whether this would be a Kolisha issue if a woman was laning. So those are the last issues that I want to wrap up, God willing, next week. Yes?
Maybe the difference between Shofar and Talmud Torah is that Shofar is the only way to get the Mitzvah Talmud Torah. They can just learn Torah.
I mean, you have other options.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point.
You know, you don't have to get up there and lane. You just read the Chumash in your bedroom.
Maybe. No, I hear you. I don't know. Okay. Shkayach, have a good Shabbos.